This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. Did you know that using DistroKid's Teams function, you can route any percentage of your track earning to a band member or collaborator? This is a free feature for all DistroKid members. Take advantage of this awesome function and so many more using our DistroKid discount link, distrokid.com/VIP/MPW.
What am I saying?
This is MPW,
the podcast with your host,
Zylo Aria.
Cool.
A podcast about music production
for the everyday musician,
where we learn from experienced studio engineers and each other.
Lorna Blackwood is an MPG and Grammy Award-winning producer. She is a vocal coach and vocal producer with a client list including Dua Lipa, Ellie Goulding, George Ezra, Kygo, Mabel, and Callum Scott. Having been on the other side of the glass for many years herself, she knows how to get inside the head of the artist and capture exactly what is needed to get the very best out of each vocal production. Lovely to have you with us today, Lorna, and I am very keen to jump into some knowledge of yours of vocal production and a few things around that. But before we jump into that, I would love to learn a little bit more about your career and how did things start in music for you and how did you get to where you are today?
Well, I started out life in musical theatre. I trained at drama school. It was all I ever wanted to do. Got a couple of theatre jobs, decided it was really boring to do the same thing every night for 6 months to a year, which the contracts tend to be. I didn't do any contracts that long. I only made it like, I did a 3 month contract and went, oh my God, I just can't do the same show every night. It's just so boring. And that's probably a bit short-sighted of 19-year-old me. But I was out of work and working in bars and stuff. And I started singing in one of the bars that I was working in. And then I started getting these like kind of high-end function gigs and stuff like that. And I realized I could do a different show every night of the week if I wanted to. And this is like back in just millennium year was the first like really big job I got with a big band. And there were loads of gigs then, loads of them. And I was gigging pretty much 5 nights a week. Sometimes on a Saturday or a Sunday, I'd do 2. And then many years of that and various other singing jobs, session singing, doing non-PRS music for the stuff you hear in lifts and restaurants and things like that. And then I started doing a bit of coaching because people started asking me for my advice, but I wasn't really that into it. And then I had to have some throat surgery and ended up training with this incredible woman called Maureen Scott, who was my vocal guru and is still coaching people today. And then she just said to me, like, you've picked this up really fast and you're really good at this. And so that's when I started coaching a few more people. And they were just kind of local artists that I'd gotten to know, some of the people I worked with. And I started a singing group, just a local thing when I was in Southwest London. And I was coaching out of this little kind of cupboard, essentially, at the front of my husband's studio in Clapham. And when I say cupboard, it was a room that two people could just about stand in. And all the guitar cases were piled up behind me on top of the piano, which was unplayable. And it was kind of comedy times, really. And then a few of the artists that Cam started working with came to me for coaching. And one of those happened to be George Ezra. So I started coaching George. And then his label asked me to do vocal production, which I'd done a little bit for my husband, for a couple of artists and a beautiful artist called Tom Tyler, who I worked with a lot. And I owe Tom a lot because he really helped me cut my teeth, I guess, on what I was doing. And then I did vocal production on Blame It On Me for George Ezra. And all of a sudden the world wanted me to be their vocal coach and quite a lot of people wanted me to do vocal production. And the coaching has always just ran alongside the production since that moment, really. And I would say the production is kind of taking over at this point, which is all happy adjustments. It's all fine. I'm very lucky. Very, very lucky.
Wow. It's really beautiful to hear. And it seems so organic how one thing sort of flowed into another. And did you think that this could be something that you were doing, I don't know, a few years back before you started?
No. I mean, in the dark days when all the gigs died on their ass, you know, and there was no work and I was doing things like music with Mummy for under 3s, which was just horrendous, but it kept me ticking over. And if you'd said to me now, I'd be doing this, I'd be like, what? How is that going to happen? But life is weird and things do happen.
Do you think, I mean,
I do believe that, you know, things come to you as they do. And of course, we do have some control over that, but not completely. But do you think there's something that's helped these things come along, whether it's, you know, having the right mindset or attitude or something that you feel like maybe has allowed you to bring these opportunities your way?
I think there's got to be a balance of knowing what you want, but also being able to change your goalposts. You know,
okay,
to be successful in this industry, you've got to be open to new avenues. I never thought I'd be a vocal coach, let alone a vocal producer. And I certainly didn't think I'd be, you know, getting awards and things like that for it. That still blows my mind. Yeah, I've always been, well, I was a singer, actress, danced a bit. I wasn't a very good dancer. And it's weird in this life because a lot of the time you don't decide what you're good at. I loved dancing. I loved it. You know, always have done since I was a tiny girl. And I loved to act. But as soon as I went into any kind of professional training, people just went, singer. Like, singing is what you do. That's where you shine. And I was like, okay. And, you know, you put the acting hat on again for a while and still it ends up with acting roles that sing. And it's, you know what I mean? It's like the world starts telling you something. Yeah, and I think you've got to be ready to take a leap of faith and always ready to try new things and see each idea through before you decide it's a crap one.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a good point as well. I think often, especially with careers in the music industry, people, because it does take a while for them to maybe come to fruition, to give up maybe a little bit too early.
Yeah, so it takes a lot longer than people think. People burst onto the scene. They don't. It's usually like a 4 to 5 year burst onto the scene.
Yes, completely agree. So is there one event in your life that you feel like you've learnt the most from?
Yes, having throat surgery definitely
okay.
was a huge thing for me. I've sung since I can remember. I've been being paid to sing since I was about 15 years old. You know, I can't ever really remember doing anything else. And then one day it's just taken away. I mean, I got to the point where I could barely make a sound, which is weird for an extremely noisy person like myself. But I just kept singing the way I'd always sang and I didn't know what was wrong. And I knew there was something wrong, but I was young, stupid. And I think I was like 22 when it all started thereabouts. Just like my voice not having the stamina that it used to, or like I'd sing one song that would really upset my vocals. I'd be like, I don't know what I did there. But I just buried my head in the sand and kept on with it, probably getting on for 2.5 years. And then in the last 6 months, my head voice, my top end just disappeared completely. And then the lower end of my voice, which was low already, just kept getting lower and lower and lower. And I'd do one gig and then I couldn't sing for a week. And in the end, I eventually went to see a specialist. And he was somebody that I'd actually seen when I was at college, when I'd had a nasty infection when I was at college. And he said to me, you know, you're not doing anything wrong. You're just really unlucky, because I had cysts on my vocal cords, which looked like the biggest nodules known to man because they'd just grown. And then I'd sung on them. So a cyst had gone hard. So it looked like an enormous nodule. So it was all very, very terrifying. I had one round of surgery where he planed both my vocal cords flat. It appeared to be going well, but I went back to singing and it appeared that the root of the cyst, he hadn't taken the root out. So the next lot of surgery I had, he scooped the root out, which was slightly more serious, but fixed the problem. But I mean, I had to be silent for 2 weeks, not a word. And that's it changes you. It's like you feel so lonely, even though you're writing everything down to people.
Goodness.
And it's really dramatic. And I remember my husband at the time just saying, oh my God, because I was in such a state. And he was like, oh my God, like what, you know, it's going to be okay. And I said, and he's a guitarist. I said, imagine somebody cut your hands off. That's what I feel like right now. I can't do the one thing I feel like I've always been able to do. But then the best things came out of it, because I'm a much better singer now than I was before. I learned everything I know about vocals through that whole period. Well, not everything, like I learned the basis of what I do throughout that period. I trained with Maureen, who was incredible, and I learned so much. And I wouldn't know how to protect my artist's vocals now if I hadn't been through that. So, yes, I'd say that's the most important thing.
Yeah, I love that. And this comes out quite often, I think, is these kind of really intense, adverse situations that people seem to obviously have gone through a traumatic experience in some way, but they also often say that they wouldn't change it because that's what's created the person that they are today. So can you tell me a random fact about yourself that maybe not that many people in the industry know about you?
Oh, God, there's so many random things about me. One that not many people know is my first job in professional theatre was playing Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. I was just turned 20, playing a 14-year-old, essentially.
Wow.
But I did love that. I loved that job. It was so much fun. And you get lots of weird mail from Judy Garland fans, which is quite strange. There's a whole Judy Garland universe out there that you're unaware of until you play Dorothy. And then I've done a few weird random jobs. I was a Britney Spears tribute for a while.
Wow. Okay.
I'm not sure I should have let that one out of the bag, but there we go.
Oh, no, that's good. That's good. A nice little fact to have. So coming into the vocal production realm, can you please describe for me what vocal production is in one sentence?
For me, vocal production is taking a vocal performance to its very limits and then taking what you've recorded and seeing how that sits and where the limit actually lies. Just exploring all possibilities. Yeah, getting great source material. Get the heart of the performance perfect. Sorry, that's not one sentence, is it? I'm really bad at one sentence answers. I'm sure you've noticed by now.
Oh, no, that's all good. So what would you say are the most common issues that you find that vocalists have when they come into a recording session?
Oh, that's easy. So they're all overthinkers. All creatives are overthinkers. Red light syndrome is something that's really, really common. So there'll be something that a vocalist can sing perfectly until you press record. And then the nerves and the pressure just gets to them. And sometimes that's really, really hard to get through. There's also fatigue and stress because 9 times out of 10, any jobbing artist is either just off the back of a video shoot, promo or tour, or it's their day off, their only day off in a week of gigs. And you've got to do a recording with them for their next single. No pressure. Honestly, that's how it goes.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so you mentioned a couple of things there, red light syndrome, fatigue as well. Are there tips that you have to overcome these?
Yeah, I mean, red light syndrome is usually based around nerves and worry. So just try and take the worry away and rationalise the situation. You know, I said to one of the artists that I work with, she was about to go live on Radio 1. And she was having a freak out, she was really nervous. And I said, look, what's your job? I'm a singer. Okay, what are you really good at? Singing. Okay, so do you think you can sing really well for 3 minutes? Just 3 minutes of your life. That's all it is. And she said, well, when you put it like that, I guess so, yeah. I was like, right, okay. So that's all we're going to do. We're going to sing really, really well for 3 minutes. I also try and take nerves away by lessening the job at hand. As an artist, you can't be responsible for everything. And a lot of artists, particularly, you know, when they've written their own music, they've been involved in the production, they've got so many things going around their mind when they're just trying to deliver that killer line in the studio. And I say, look, don't worry about anything else. Sing me the line. I'm here to tell you if there's anything right or wrong with it. And I won't ask you to sing it again unless I tell you why I want you to sing it again. So it's like delegating the concern to somebody else. You don't need to worry about if this is the right microphone for you. My engineer's got that covered. You don't need to worry about, did you get the phrasing right in that particular take? I'll tell you if you didn't. Just get in the headspace, get the emotion right and tell me a story. And usually that works. And then if it doesn't, I'll just get them a glass of red wine.
Oh, gosh. That first bit that you said about the BBC Radio 1 performance, the live performance there, what you said was so simple, but also so true. Like when you put it that way, this person obviously has so much training and it is just 3 minutes, but that can be so easily overthought and made into this huge deal. So that's genius.
Oh, thank you for that. Thank you. I think social media has made it really hard for people just to live in the moment because the universe is in your pocket, essentially, on your phone, watching. And that's hard.
Yeah. Yes. No, definitely. So a lot of the vocalists that you're working with and a lot of the people you have worked with are extremely experienced vocalists, some of them household names that are so good at what they do already. So can you tell me, how do you go about finding improvement points on what, as a bass performance, in a lot of people's eyes is probably already at a really good level?
Well, I guess there's two sides to that. So a lot of these people I've been working with for a long time. So I've been there through their journey into becoming an incredible vocalist. So I know when they're at their optimum and when they're not. But in my opinion, there's always somewhere else to go. There's always that. I mean, I guess I'm there for the final 2%. And what makes the difference between a talent and a superstar is the final 2%. You know, being able to bare your soul at the microphone, being able to deliver that line in such a way that, you know, it means a million different things to a million different people across the world because it connects. I do say to some of the artists that I work with, like, unfortunately, incredible sits just next to vulnerable. So you're going to have to, like, bear all for us to find the gold. So, yeah, I believe there's always somewhere else to go and to let people in.
Okay. Well, on that note, when you're talking about being vulnerable and letting people in and really bringing out the emotion in that song, often if someone is writing their own music, they might have written something at a different time to when they are delivering that or recording that song. So how do you go about getting them into that mind space again, where they remember that emotion and are able to deliver that?
So quite often I don't go to what the song was actually written about. Sometimes we make, like, it's like making like a 3-minute movie, if you like. And sometimes it's a dreamscape, abstract, just collage of emotions and feelings. Sometimes it's a pop video that you can quite clearly see in front of your eyes whilst the artist is singing. And sometimes it's just down to things like getting the articulation right, making sure you can hear the lyrics. And yeah, I quite often ask an artist to leave behind the day they wrote the song and let's make it about something else.
Okay.
So kind of the opposite of method acting, I guess. You're not putting yourself in it. You're making it about something else in order to put yourself there. But then sometimes it is necessary to, particularly when people have written very, very sad songs, like songs about grief or loss. Sometimes it's a really, really difficult tightrope to walk, but putting yourself in that moment and treading that line where you don't cry and you can still sing, but you're emotional enough. If you can walk that line, you'll sometimes get an incredible performance, but it's difficult. And so that's when sometimes you make it about something different to get the same result.
Okay. That's a very interesting approach. I wouldn't have thought to kind of go for a different place than where maybe the song was written. So that's very interesting. And also, some issues that I feel like artists can tend to have, and I've heard about a few times, is when they are initially in the songwriting phase and they are just writing or recording a demo, and that comes out in a way that they're really happy with, but then in their mind it's just a demo. So when they're trying to re-record it in better settings or in like a nicer studio space, they're not able to get that same delivery and they're so kind of tied to that demo vocal. What would you say in that case?
Well, I mean, demoitis, we call this in the industry, and that's being addicted to your demo, which is essentially just something you've gotten very used to hearing. Therefore, your ears are happier hearing that than something else. I have to say, it's usually label, management and team that get addicted to the demo, not the artist. There's always little pieces in a demo that an artist will say to me, I love that bit and I love that bit. But essentially, for any singer, they're quite often reliving the moment that something was recorded, which sometimes in a writing session is quite stressful because it's the end of the day, everyone's got to go, get the vocal down, you know, or there was something you weren't quite happy with and you thought, oh, I'll just get it down for now and I'll change it at a later date, or, you know, there's all this going on. So vocalists are very guilty, myself included, of reliving the recording, which is why comping your own vocals is so hard. Because even though you might have the take of a lifetime, in your mind, you're like, oh, that was the one where I had that tickle in my throat. And I don't find that a lot. There are always moments. But as I said, there's always somewhere else to go. And I think a lot of vocalists, they think they've done their best moment when in actual fact, they just needed to take the reins off and run free a bit with it and you get something better. And I don't know many vocalists who prefer their demo to what we do together, but there are always people in the chain of command that there's, you know, they really like the demo. Mm. But I think a lot of the time it's just showing people that it's not the be all and end all, that there's other options.
Yeah, right. Okay. And you mentioned there around letting the reins go and just kind of having some freedom with it. What would you say to an artist to allow them to think a bit differently in how they're delivering what they are maybe used to delivering in a similar way?
Oh, there's so many ways to do it. So if I'm working with an artist I've never worked with before, I normally, you know, we have this little chat to begin with about today is about me discovering what kind of direction you take best. So there are some vocalists that respond really, really well to emotional direction, like you're directing a play or a movie. In fact, most people respond to that in various percentages, but, you know, most people respond to that because we all, you know, we're all emotional beings as creatives, so people find it easy to follow that kind of path. But then some people respond really, really well to kind of textural direction. And so I'll say, you know, imagine you're singing it out into a canyon, or imagine your vocal is treacle or something tangible that you could run your hands through, make it move slower. Or some people like work really well with colours. So I do a little bit of that as well. Like I need it to start red, burning hot, and then ease out into yellow. But then there's a period of discovery about finding how an artist works best. And then when they found their freedom, there's always little tweaks to be made with technical tweaks about, I love that last take, keep everything there, but now I need you to do this in order to achieve this, and I need you to do that in order to achieve that. So I tend to do a little bit of everything. That's how I give vocalists freedom, is give them more tools for the toolkit.
Yeah. Oh, that's very, very cool. Like, even...
is it? I don't know. It sounds a bit like, bonkers when I say it out loud.
I was like, start burning red and then go to some other colour. I was like, I want to try that.
So sometimes when I write notes to people that I work with a lot, I'm like, if anybody read this, you know, I'd be put away. I just sounds like a lunatic. I don't know, like making some kind of word collage.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great. I mean, obviously it's working. So I don't think you'd be put away at all. And it's, yeah, very, very interesting to hear how like textural words can impact a delivery of a vocal as well.
Oh yeah, they really can. Really, really can.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. So can you tell me what tips you might give to someone looking to improve their skills as a vocal producer?
Tips and skills. I would say sing yourself is the most important thing. You've got to know what it feels like for somebody else. When I get a new song, I've got a session today, I only got the song yesterday, I've already sung it like 15 times. I want to know what it feels like so that when I'm directing my vocalist today, I know what they're going through. I know how it sits. I know. And that's not always so easy, like when you're working with men, for instance, you know, like obviously your voice is very different. But then there's a lot of women that my voice is very different to as well. I just want to know how it feels in your body. And I think that being able to sing, whether it's good or bad or whatever, you've got to know what it feels like. Get on the other side of the glass yourself. Get in there. Get someone else to press go and know what it feels like that moment they say, right, are you ready? Off we go. Because it's pretty fucking daunting most of the time. And I think a lot of people don't account for that. So yeah, I think that's the biggest skill you can improve is your empathy for the artist. My least favorite moment in the recording studio is when like you've given your all and then there's a click where the talkback comes on. They press the button and you go, that was good. Should we go again? And you think, oh my God, they hated it. Oh no. Oh God, it was awful. What did I do wrong? Oh my God. You know, and then the gremlins start speaking and you start sweating and the nerves take over and hey presto, you're in red light syndrome land and an unrelaxed singer and the session's going to be a hell of a lot longer than it would have been if you just knew what they were going through.
Mm. Okay. So in the case that you do know what they're going through, how would that change how you interact with them?
I think there'd be more patience. I think there would be more description of what you want. Mm. I try not to get a vocalist to do anything again unless I tell them why. And if I do need them to do it again, just exactly the same, I say that to them. I say, perfect, I just need four exactly like that. And letting the singer know what's coming next. Don't leave them in limbo, because then you're going to get great performance if they know exactly what is required of them at every moment, they've got something to focus on, so they stop overthinking.
Okay. Awesome. Really, really good tips there. And what advice would you have for someone looking to form a career in vocal production?
Wow, that's a hard one because it's a tough industry. But I would say, like, just keep doing your best every day. Leave no stone unturned. Don't walk out of any situation unless you think it's complete. If there's the tiniest thing that you missed, just go back. Don't be scared to go, I don't think we've got that. And don't be scared to speak up and say that that could be better. Because even if you're in a situation, and I'm talking like in the, you know, rising up to be a vocal producer, whether you're on the engineering side of things, or if you're in the performance side of things, or if that's where you're trying to steer your career, artists will always respect you for being honest. They might hate you for 5 minutes whilst they get over what you said. But at the end of the day, people respect you. As a vocal producer, there's only one person in the machine that makes up an artist that's going to insist on you being there for vocal production, and that's your artist. They're the only person who's going to say, I need my vocal producer to do this today, or I want them to do my vocal production because of what they did on that. It's attention to detail and making sure you've spoken up for that, I think.
Yeah. No, that's a good one, and I'm sure one that also comes with time and confidence.
It's really scary when you're younger, especially that first time that you go, I think we should do that again, when you know that's not what people want to hear. It's like, okay, I'm not that popular right now, but at least you can walk away knowing that you did your best.
Yeah, for sure. So do you have one dream vocalist that you'd like to work with?
It's so hard. My two favourite singers on earth are no longer with us anymore. George Michael, who's my absolute, just all-time favourite. I probably reference George more than any other vocalist when I'm in the studio and we're talking about, like, I want it to be like that. And Freddie Mercury, just incredible, incredible vocalists. But then I'm lucky that I get to work with the likes of Callum Scott, Sam Ryder, Tom Walker, who all float my vocal boat in the same way as those people. So I guess I've got the next best thing. I guess if there's somebody current, I'd love to get in the studio with Taylor Swift, just because she's so versatile, so talented. And I love her voice. I do. And I love the way she's not scared of just going, let's do something entirely different.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Well, maybe that will come about in some stage.
I'm putting it out there. Taylor, I'm right here.
That's all.
If ever you want to, like, try this on for size.
Yes. Oh, for sure. We'll tag her in the episode. So I think you covered a few audience questions that we had already, Lorna, but there's one that Beck asked specifically around, what do you do outside of vocal production to maintain a healthy lifestyle?
I like to eat well. I like good food. I don't like eating rubbish. I walk my dog every day, 2 or 3 times a day. I like going to the gym and stuff, but I think it's really important to laugh and smile every day. It's just good for you. But yeah, I would say healthy eating and staying active is how I look after myself outside of vocal production. Yeah.
Oh, very, very important things.
Yeah. I mean, it's sometimes not easy when you're in the studio all the time, but it's really important, I think. And I tell all my vocalists that as well, not just the ones that I produce, but the ones that I coach, you know, look after your body, because your voice isn't your instrument. Your voice is just the strings. Your body's your instrument.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. So actually now we are at our mini speed quiz.
God, I'm a bit nervous about this bit.
Are you ready?
I'm a waffler and a ditherer, so speed quiz makes me go, oh.
You know what? I feel like you're going to ace it, and it's just 5 quick this or that questions.
Oh God, okay.
And we are. Okay, we're starting now. Laundry or dishes?
Laundry.
Headphones or speakers?
Speakers.
Science or maths?
Oh God, they're both horrendous. Science, maths gives me the absolute, like, heebie-jeebies. Oh no.
Okay, festival or rave?
Festival.
Digital or analog?
Analog.
Okay. All right. I'd say a bit medium on the speediness scale, but not.
Oh, was I supposed to be being faster? Mate, I'm going to blame Zoom.
Fine.
I'm going to blame the internet connection. It's so slow.
Oh my gosh. Yes. No, that was very speedy. In that
case. You edit it so that I sound faster and more with it and I'm more of an exciting person?
Oh, you have been very, very exciting, Orna, for sure. I think in lots of different ways. So just coming to our top tips, Lorna. So can you tell me your one top career tip?
I think I've probably already said it, but always do your best. Just do your best and be nice. It's all very well being good in this world, but if you're a pain in the ass, nobody's going to want you around. So just be nice. It's nice very to be nice.
It is. Yes. Two very good tips there. And you might have covered some of this already, but your one top self-care tip.
Get outside in the daylight every day and in nature if you can.
Yes.
Yeah. Even if it's like walking across a common or a green and have a coffee, just do that. But get some fresh air, I think, is really good for you.
Yeah. No, also very, very important. And one top general life tip.
I would say let go of aesthetics. Like, stop thinking about how it looks. Think about how it feels. I think if it feels good on the inside, it's bound to look great on the outside. You know, like that dress that you put on and it feels like it's wearing you and you're like, oh, I can't look good in this because I'm itchy and I'm uncomfortable and I don't want to sit down in it. And whereas if it feels great, you're bound to feel great and then you'll look great.
So true.
Which is probably very low maintenance of me, but
I love that. That's
very comfortable shoes answer of me, isn't it?
Oh, no, it's good. I feel like and it's quite nuanced as well. Like, you can find different levels of how to take that advice. So I love that. I think lots of wisdom there. Yeah. So that has been so great, Lorna.
And thank you
so much for sharing your wisdom. And I think so much there that I'm keen to try out as well in my own music. And I'm sure our audience is going to get lots of little gems there through the episode as well. So really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for inviting me. It's honestly really, really lovely to be asked. Yeah. Thanks.
My biggest three takeaways from Lorna's episode was, firstly, to try singing the song that you will be vocal producing multiple times so that you know what it feels like to be behind the glass and you can be more empathetic with your direction to your artist. My second biggest takeaway was to not leave any stone unturned and to speak up if you don't feel like you have the right take yet. Even though it might be scary, it will be better for the project down the line. And my last takeaway was that it can be useful to use textural direction for your artist to allow them to try different techniques of singing, such as imagine you are singing through a canyon or starting from red and going through to blue to the end of the song. That's it from us this week. I hope you enjoyed the episode and we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.